You're listening to a podcast from catholicchurch.org.uk.
Well, we've been through Advent, a time of hope and prayerful reflection. Now we have the joy of Christmas, which of course is a season where we celebrate the birth of Christ. But when we look to the Nativity, when we look to Bethlehem, do we think about the Christians of these biblical lands? Well, it's an important point, and joining me to look more closely at the lands of Christ is Dr. Harry Hagopian. Harry is a lawyer and consultant on the Middle East for the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. He was also the Assistant General Secretary of the Middle East Council of Churches, and he has written extensively on faith and politics in the region. So somebody that we should be talking to most definitely about this subject. Hi, Harry. How are you doing?
Hello, James. I'm fine. Thank you very much. A little bit of a cold, so your listeners would, I hope, not mind that I might sound a little bit bunged up, but I'm fine.
We're just after your expertise, Harry. So, where would you like to start? Can we have something of an overview of Christianity?
Yes, actually, when you invited me to come and have a chat with you about the Christians in the Middle East, I remembered rather fondly the conversations we had a few months ago, also when the Holy Father visited Jordan, Israel, and Palestine. Mm-hmm. And there also we talked a little bit, perhaps more about his itinerary and what he was doing and where he was going and why was he doing what he was doing.
Yeah.
And a little bit less about the local Christians in this large region of the world. So it is good today to address the issue of Christians in the Middle East. And of course, the first point I would make, which is a point that many of your listeners would be aware of, but it is also surprising, at least it's surprising to me, how many people are unaware that there are considerable numbers of Christians across the whole Middle East who aren't actually missionaries or foreign Christians or people who come from other parts of the world, but they're actually native indigenous Christians and largely Arab Christians who live in different parts of the Middle East, who witness to Christ in those parts of the world, despite many difficulties sometimes, and who are often forgotten. So when I talk about Christians in the Middle East as a whole, there are two expressions, funnily enough, that come to my mind almost parallel one to the other. The first is the expression, the living stones. And it's taken from St. Peter's first epistle, where he talks about the first Christians. So I always remember the living stones, the people who give meaning and significance through their faith and witness to the stones in the Middle East. But the other one that also is almost paradoxical, and many Christians actually label themselves that way these days, is forgotten faithful. Because when we talk about Christians, we seem to think about Christians as in Rome, as in Europe, as in United States. But when we talk about the Middle East, we don't always realize that there are local Christians who are there and have been there since the beginning of Christianity, and that actually our biblical story, the story of the Nativity in Bethlehem and then leading up to the resurrection and Easter in Jerusalem, are basically stories that took place there with native people. And some of those people there can somehow, although a little bit awkwardly, trace their lineage all the way to the early centuries and the early church. So I think this is something that always makes me first proud to be a Christian, secondly, proud to be a Christian from the region, and third, one that has managed to sustain his faith alongside his own Armenian community as well as the other communities in the Middle East, despite all the difficulties across many, many centuries.
Well, difficulties, I think, is a word that we'll hear again during this talk, no doubt. And although clearly we're going to be talking Israel, Palestine, Jordan, Syria, we're also going to step into Africa and speak about Egypt a little bit. And we're going to also look to the Gulf states and talk a little bit Iraq, Iran. So where would you like to start, Harry?
Well, it doesn't really matter where we start, James, but I suppose since the story unfolds in the Holy Land, as we call it, and we basically talk about Nazareth and about Bethlehem and then about Jerusalem, perhaps it is right to start by remembering the local, the indigenous Christians of the Holy Land. And by the Holy Land, of course, I mean Israel, Palestine, and Jordan. And of course, maybe politically it doesn't sit very comfortably together because most of your listeners would have a fairly good idea of some of the problems, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, for instance, as well as the fact that Jordan is an adjacent country that has a very strong history with the Israelis and the Palestinians. But it is where the whole story started. And I think it would be good to remind listeners that the Christians in the Holy Land have been there since early centuries and have been witnessing to their faith since the early centuries and have been there facing many, many problems, not least political problems, but also faith-based problems. And there are many, many different denominations. When we talk about Christians in the Holy Land, we're not only talking about a monochromatic presence. We're talking, for instance, about all the Byzantine and Oriental Orthodox churches. We're talking about the different Catholic churches. We're talking about the Anglican and Reformed churches. So it's very interesting for me because it's a real mosaic. And the interesting thing is not so much that there is such diversity within Christianity in the Holy Land, but that it is such a small presence, and yet they play such a major part in the life and witness of the whole region. So I think that when people, pilgrims, go to Bethlehem these days in order to visit the Basilica of the Nativity, or when they go there to assist in the Christmas celebrations of the different churches, they keep in mind that there are people there who live there, who work there, who witness to their faith there. And therefore, as they are visiting the buildings, the churches, they also remember that they're human beings who would need their prayers, their support, and their solidarity as well. When I used to live there and I was involved with the peace process during the Oslo period a few years back, and we used to receive different pilgrim groups from different parts of the world, be it North America, Europe, or even sometimes Africa, I would always tell them, don't run, walk. And as you walk, stop and meet the local shopkeeper or the person sitting in front of his house. Chances are that some of those are also Christians and they have a story to tell. And I think in our Christian faith, there is also this very strong factor of fellowship. And I think that fellowship comes through when we commune with each other rather than when we go in order to say, oh, yes, you know, I went and saw the seven buildings. I went to the Galilee. I went to Jerusalem. And then I've done my bit. No, you haven't done your bit, in my opinion. In my opinion, to do your bit, to do your real pilgrimage, is to go and meet those people, those forgotten faithful I referred to earlier, who actually are in need of our support here in the West, because life isn't always easy for them either.
Well, we have Friends of the Holy Land now, the charity Friends of the Holy Land in the UK. Really, I think respecting those very things you've talked about, the prayerful support, the financial support, if it can be done, and also encouraging people to visit the region.
These are some of the points that are very necessary, James, and I agree with you entirely. And the Bishops' Conference in England and Wales has been instrumental in trying to support and undergird the Christian presence and the Catholic presence within the Holy Land. There is a meeting just coming up in a few weeks' time in January in Jerusalem, which is going to look at the whole issue of the Christian presence in the Holy Land, but also at the importance of Jerusalem to the three faiths. I remember fondly the former Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem was Michel Sabah, who used to have this famous statement of his phrase, which said, the two peoples and three faiths of the Holy Land. Every time he spoke about the Holy Land, whether from a theological, religious perspective or from a political perspective. And by that he meant two peoples, of course, the Israelis and the Palestinians, the three faiths being Jews, Christians and Muslims. And it is very important to remember that, and it is also very important to support this formula, because coexistence is very important. And at the moment, with the political problems between Israelis and Palestinians, with some tensions every now and then erupting in different parts of that land between, say, also Christians and Muslims, it is important to pray and for peace in that part of the world and to pray for a more convivial coexistence between the different faith communities. This is something that the Bishops Conference does, but this is also something that the World Council of Churches and the Middle East Council of Churches do as well. This is not defeatism. This is not apologia. This is basically trying to highlight that diversity that actually brings together different peoples in one very small parcel of land.
Isn't part of the problem that as ordinary, dare I say, Catholics in the pew here in the UK, isn't the problem that we look through, in a sense, the media, the cameras, the Western media lens when we look at Israel and Palestine, when we look at Lebanon, when we look arguably at Iraq? I mean, don't we need to actually clear up what the reality is for those Christians in these countries?
Well, that reality of Christians in those countries, I don't think you're going to get it, James, from looking at the television screens or listening even to the radio. Televisions and radios are much more interested in either breaking news or sensationalist news. But if you want to talk about the reality of those Christians, the best way to do it is to go and visit those parts of the world. Now, interestingly enough, it's not so difficult to go and visit the Middle East. And I'm not only talking about Israel, Palestine, or Jordan here. I'm talking about the vast region. I'm talking about Lebanon. I'm talking about Egypt. I'm talking about Syria. I'm talking about the Gulf. It is not that difficult. It's just a plane, a flight away. And it is not actually even more expensive than, say, going to other parts of Europe or even North America. And it is a different setting. And most people who come, again, from, I'm speaking from experience from the years I lived there and worked both as a political negotiator and also as an executive of the Middle East Council of Churches, I used to welcome groups who would come in being extremely skeptical and cynical about the whole thing, saying that this is all a publicity setup. But after they met the people, after they walked where Jesus and the prophets walked, after they saw some of the Christians of the region and they left, there is almost a metanoia, a transformation in their whole approach, not only to the region itself, because they begin to understand much more closely the real intricacies of the political and faith setups, which is something you cannot do simply by looking at the headlines in your broadsheets, but also coming back with a keen sense of solidarity with the Christians of the Middle East. I've seen this happen in Israel, Palestine, Jordan, as I said. I've seen this happen in Lebanon, where people aren't exactly sure what the Christian dimension is. Iraq, when it was safe to go to Iraq to some extent, but also in Egypt, also in Syria. I mean, how many people know when Syria is politically ostracized sometimes through our own media organs or channels? How many people know that, in my estimation, one of the safest havens for local Arab Christians in the Middle East now is Syria, which has a very secular approach to faith, where it welcomes those Christians, and where, from personal experience, I know that they are as happy as anybody else being in that part of the world. They do not feel any particular discrimination against them because of their faith. Now, what I'm doing is not a publicity stunt for Syria. What I'm trying to say is that if we look at it from the lens of politics, then we realize, oh, wow, Syria is what George Bush, the former U.S. president, called an axis of evil. So how can we actually believe that Christians live there, local Christians, and are comfortable? Actually, they are, and they get about their own business quite well every day. So in a sense, it's important to be exposed to those realities, and those realities perhaps could become clearer when people listen to this program, for instance, and the way in which you and I and a lot of your colleagues at the Conference of Bishops go there regularly in order to meet with those local people, in order to help them financially. Because when we say financially, what do we mean financially? We're providing them a little bit with housing. We're providing them with the ability to send their kids to school, because a lot of people can't afford the tuition fees to go to schools. These are the kinds of things we are doing as a sense of solidarity amongst the wider worldwide communion of Christians.
Well, let's stick with Israel, Palestine, Jordan just for one second. What Christian traditions do we have there, and what is that reality? Are they oppressed? Do they live freely? What is the reality?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about the Christians in the Holy Land, if we're going to use this large formula to incorporate Israel, Palestine and Jordan only, in Israel, Palestine particularly, less so in Jordan, where Christians, a bit like Syria, are living, in my opinion, in very safe, secure, comfortable existence. But in Israel, Palestine, what is happening is that the Christians who are there, the local indigenous Christians who are there, and some of the expatriate Christians and missionaries who also go and live there for a while, are actually living in the hub of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So there is an ethnic reality there, Arab versus Jew. And then there is also Arab-Palestinian versus Jew. And then there is also the issue of the pressures they feel, the political pressures they feel as Arabs in an occupation of most of the West Bank and Arab side of Jerusalem. So they are part and parcel of that political reality. And Christians cannot excuse themselves from that reality, because most of them are culturally Middle Eastern, ethnically Middle Eastern, and therefore they're part and parcel of that land. A Palestinian Christian has the same set of problems, more or less, as does a Palestinian Muslim in terms of economy, in terms of livelihood, in terms of sending his or her kids to school, in terms of being able to go to work or find work, in terms of the wars and the checkpoints and the roadblocks and the separation wall that basically divides communities. One minute you have a wall where your house is on one side of the wall and your shop is on the other. So how are you going to either earn your living or live with your family? These are some of the existential problems that are faced by Christians like anybody else because of the political realities of the region. But over and above that, I also must admit that there is a sense sometimes of some tensions that arise, say, between radicals from different faiths. And I am aware of some tensions that have been there, for instance, in Bethlehem or in other parts of the West Bank, between Christians who sometimes have a more Western or a more open approach from other Muslims who have a much more conservative approach. So you see those tensions sometimes coming up, which when I was living there, and I know it happens now also, that there are mechanisms where faith or community leaders from the different faiths come together and immediately try to nip those conflicts in the bud in order to prevent them from becoming bigger or causing much more problem. But you can feel sometimes that sense of radicalism, that sense of tension that sometimes permeates through the Arab neighborhoods between Christian and Muslim. But I would also say, by and large, having come from that part of the world and having lived in an area where in my own neighborhood there were Christian houses and families and Muslim houses and families living basically next to each other. I used to go cycling every evening after school with my friends. Two of them happened to be Christian, one Armenian and one Greek Orthodox. And then there were another two who were Muslims. And we never actually stopped to think about, is this identity Muslim, Christian? What kind of Christian? What kind of Muslim? These are all permutations that have suddenly come up recently as the political situation has deteriorated, as people's levels of tensions and stress have come up, that they have suddenly started thinking a little bit along the line of giving people labels, which wasn't what the case was at the beginning. So, yes, those tensions are there. Part of those tensions are fueled or stoked up by the political realities that people live there. But also, I think, by the fact that inevitably we have our own way of witnessing to our faith, and it doesn't always necessarily come together very, very easily.
You're listening to a podcast from catholicchurch.org.uk.